This is Catherine Hastings, and you're listening to Word Temple on KRCB 91.1 FM. Welcome back to Word Temple. In September of 2015, the Word Temple Poetry Series that takes place at the Sebastopol Center for the Arts hosted three poets, Stephen Kessler, Devereaux Baker, and Michelle Wing. Stephen Kessler translated a book of poems called Forbidden Pleasures, New Selected Poems of Luis Cernuda. Cernuda is a very famous Spanish poet, one of the most influential poets of the generation of 27. Devereaux Baker was celebrating a new collection of poems, which won an award. The book is called Out of the Bones of the Earth. Really magnificent work. And the third poet who read that evening was Sonoma County poet Michelle Wing. She's the author of a collection called Body on the Wall, and she read some new poems as well. I want to play here as much of that evening as I possibly can. So I'm going to move on now to the Word Temple Poetry Series. It opens up with an introduction to Michelle Wing. After Michelle, Devereaux Baker reads, and then finally, Stephen Kessler reading the poems of Luis Cernuda.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome back to the Word Temple Poetry Series. I'm Catherine Hastings. A lot of you were here just a couple of weeks ago when we had the anthology reading, so thanks for coming back again tonight. And because of the fact that we have two more readings from the anthology, Digging Our Poetic Roots Poems from Sonoma County, in September and October, this is the last reading of the Word Temple Poetry Series for the year. I don't usually cut out this early, but there's just too much work to do. So thanks for coming tonight. It's going to be a wonderful evening because we have three very wonderful poets here to celebrate the last reading. We have Stephen Kessler here, who has been to Word Temple a couple of times before, and it's always good to have him back. Devereaux Baker, who read, I think, in 2007 at Word Temple. And then Michelle Wing, our local Sonoma County poet. So we are going to start with Michelle. She is, as I said, a Sonoma County poet, a Sonoma County treasure, actually. She's not only a poet, but she is the founder of Changing Hurt to Hope, Writers Speak Out Against Domestic Violence, working as a volunteer with the YWCA in Sonoma County. And since 2010, she has used that reading series as a tool to help others recover from a very often hidden problem, this type of abuse. Recently, she co-edited an anthology, which is over on the table with the other books, called Cry of the Nightbird, Writers Against Domestic Violence. It's a wonderful anthology. We did a radio show very recently that you can still find on the archives at Word Temple on KRCB. And so you can go there. Her own collection of poems is called Body on the Wall. It was released by Saddle Road Press in Hawaii last year. I just think it's so cool that there's a book out from Hawaii. You know, no matter what it was, I would buy it because it's from Hawaii. There are poems in the book that shock. There are poems that bring peace, and there are poems in the book that make you laugh. It covers everything. So it's not a book about victimhood. It's about a book of possibilities that come out of certain events. So right now it gives me great pleasure to welcome Michelle Wing.
Tonight I'm going to read just one poem from my book Body on the Wall, because at the same time that I did the Word Temple reading with Cry of the Nightbird for the radio, we also did a segment on Body on the Wall. So if you want to hear more of those poems, you can listen there. So the first poem is the very first poem in my collection, and it's called The Elements, a four-part incantation. 1. Sky, reveal my pathway. extract the slender gray of navigation from midnight stars? Is it a northern passage, or will I awake again tomorrow as a lost soul? 2. Murmur, soft sparrow, yours is not the fire of the phoenix, yet so much beauty in a single feather, in each note of simple song. 3. A wolf vanishes in night. Follow him with pine boughs. Cry low. Find despair. Day blooms morning after like a sigh. 4. Remember water. Not the pool, not the cascade from the cliff, but this bead on your fingertip, containing all the world, and in a blink, gone. In 2011, as a journalist, I went to the women's prison in Chowchilla with a program called Get on the Bus that brings children to visit their incarcerated mothers on Mother's Day. So this is from a series of, the first two poems I will read are from a series of poems, and it's called Mother's Day Valley State Prison for Women, Chowchilla, 2011. 4. Because both years and miles split these families, I ask, where are you from? How long have you been here? When does your sentence end? One woman says, I live in Oakland. Mama, no you don't. Eduardo, age 10, interrupts. You live here. 8. Weave. In the midst of bustle, games, noise, small girl sits patient. Mother weaves strands of hair in, out, over, under with elastic bands. This is serious, no smiles. Sometimes it pulls and the girl winces. Mother smooths the scalp, continues. Time is short. The visit will end, but braids, these braids, will last for weeks. And anyone who sees the straight rows, careful lines, will know this girl has a good mother.
Michelle, thank you. Thank you so much. Again, her book is Body on the Wall, and it's over on the table. Okay, our next poet is Devereaux Baker. She read at Word Temple, like I said, I think way back in 2007 when we were still in Copperfield's books. That was a while ago. Since that time, her poetry has gone on to win many awards, including the Penn Oakland Josephine Miles Award, the 2014 Barbara Mandico Kelly Poetry Peace Prize from the Nuclear Age Peace Foundation, the Women's Global Leadership Poetry Prize, the California Arts Council Award, and others. All of these awards were easily deserved. As a reader, it has been very interesting for me to note the progression of Devereaux Baker's work over the years, how her poems address the major issues of the day while still maintaining a focus on the internal world, the struggles and joys of being a fully aware human in these times. The poetry in her latest collection, Out of the Bones of the Earth, it's a beautiful book. They scream relevance as we are moved from California to Greece to Afghanistan and Iran, all over the place, all while maintaining a lyrical power that reflects and feeds a host of emotions. Doran Robbins says, Baker is an unarmed warrior of mutuality, pleading for a fest with all migrant tongues, pleading for an end to the pestilence of political policies, cultural and religious superstitions that poison the materials four longed-for feasts might be made from. Please welcome Devereaux Baker.
Thank you so much, Catherine.
Thank you.
So I'm going to begin by reading poems from the new book, and then I'd like to end by reading just a couple of new poems, and a poem that's not in the book, that's an older poem. Khalifa. California is a woman dreaming outside time, sleeping with her face to the sea, abalone shells in her ears, chalcedony at her throat. She holds feathers dipped in blood, repeats the mantra of the sky at dusk. She dreams of great fault lines. She dreams of pushing free from the country that tries to contain her. She carries a distant longing that moves through her like a migration of wings envelops the sky. She dreams of all her children scattered like seeds that sprout inside her mouth. At dusk, she slips inside your bones to walk the streets of your hometown, eat chili peppers out of paper cups, dance to La Bamba in the parking lot of your backyard. She undoes her hair, opens up her dress. She is not in mourning for all that is lost. She is reclaiming what is hers with the party of old souls stamping on trash cans and beating drums in the living room of your grandmother's house. She is a hungry ghost eating all the tortillas and beans in your sister's kitchen, betting crazy stakes with the Hell's Angels who live next door. And when night falls, she slips back into the shape of a crow to call out the names of places you forgot, rising like a litany now inside you. Pacoima, Boyle Heights, Locke, Hunter's Point, Crenshaw, Cucamonga. There is this wonderful field I like to go to. It's midway between Mendocino and Gualala. And at a certain time of the year, every year, white egrets and cranes come and just fill that field. It's like it's totally white. This poem is called Cranes. What if we could pull back every lost opportunity, every loss becoming a white bird we cradle in our bodies? So we become receptacles of transformation. Imagine a field, cranes returning to nest, and we are the light they are flying into. I've also been loving writing poems and various character voices. This is Eve. Snake. I was the woman pulled out of Adam's side as a small sliver of bone, God named rib. Adam did not cry when I appeared. He only lifted his hand and offered me his mouth. Snake told me later, he saw it all, how God slipped his hand in Adam's perfect flesh and without a thought to his son's health, broke the bone clean off. Snake winked at that. I cried and covered my eyes. What is lost in the face of such great shame? There was jasmine growing wild, heavy scent of honeysuckle and ropey vines of passion flower. There was the smell of sex everywhere we went. The air was stung with bees and white moths shimmered against our skin. I could say it was not my fault. Blame it on the vibrant pattern of scales that rose and fell each time Snake climbed a tree and hung his dazzling body just within sight, long enough to throw splinters of color igniting rainbows against my skin. I could say it was God's fault. for creating such fragile lives in such an abundant place. Later, Snake comforted me in ways Adam never did. He listened and encouraged me to speak my thoughts, helped me find my voice, so I felt a wide opening in my heart, a singular plane of female knowledge about to burst forth, a light that could not be contained by one man, or for that matter, by God's plan. This is no confession. I knew what I was doing. The acolyte of wind was drawing me to her, muse of a larger understanding grown vast as a universe of stars. I am Eve. I picked the fruit, I kissed the snake, and I welcomed the unknown world waiting just beyond the garden's gate. In the year of the drone. Hurry. You have to tell them. A girl is walking down the street, hand in hand with her mother, coming or going to a wedding or a birth. There is the sound of celebration in the air, the smell of spice on their hair and fingers. You have to warn them. The vendors are setting up carts at the edges of the street. A woman carries her baby in her arms. A man lifts his son onto his shoulders for a better view of our world. Somewhere, miles and lifetimes away, men sit in a room lit by screens. Dead light is trapped against their forms. You know how this will end. You have to warn them. When Cortez burned the aviaries, he chose to destroy what was innocent, what was precious to the people. He chose to wage war by first putting to flame great blue herons, snowy egrets, spring tanagers, and hummingbirds. You have to go now. A burning coin has been tossed in the air. There are faces lit by dead light, watching from miles and lifetimes away. Recipe for peace. Bare your feet, roll up your sleeves, oil the immigrant's bowl. Open the doors and windows of your house, invite in the neighbors, invite in strangers off the street, roll out the dough. Add the spices for a good life, cardamom and soul, cumin and tears. Stir in sesame and sorrow, a dash of salt, pink as new hope. Rub marjoram and thyme, lemongrass and holy basil on your fingers and pat the dough. Bless the table, bless the bread, bless your hands and feet, bless the neighbors and strangers off the street. Bake the bread for a century or more on a moderate heat under the olive trees in your backyard or on the sun-filled stones of Syria, in the white rocks of Beirut or behind the walls of Jerusalem, in the mountains of Afghanistan and in the skyscrapers of New York. Feast with all the migrant tongues until your mouth understands the taste of many different homes, and your belly is full, so you fall asleep, cradled in the skirts of the world, curled in the lap of peace. And I don't think this next poem needs any explanation. It started to actually rain just a bit on the drive down from Mendocino, and I got so excited, I was going, "It's raining!" And Barry started counting the drops. You know, one, two, three. Nostalgia for the rain. It began with a tin roof. Sounds like silver sticks falling from air. A dash of bird feet, despair or love at all the edges. It began with a car gleaming bumpers, windshield wipers forming a pattern of lost and found, the truth of the seen versus the unseen. It began with a picnic, wicker baskets of fruit, grass still dazed from a sudden shower. It was spring, or was it fall? The brush of winter woven into scarves. It arrived in the blue smell at the base of clouds, became a dark thought, fell in torrents, released us from ourselves. It began with a mattress on the cabin floor, the smell of wet pines, redwood singing in hidden groves. It came in a rush, unfolded wet knees, a vertebra of desire. It began with your body in the afternoon, the smell of rain conjuring memories, silver sticks falling across our shoulders, a dash of bird feet on all the rooftops of the world. I'm going to read a couple of poems that aren't in the book. Speak of the dead. Do not be afraid. The dead will not hurt you. They belong to you now, even though you do not speak their language of lost bodies. Although you do not recognize their features, when you speak of them, you turn on a small light that dangles in a room with no walls. When you say their names, you create a shiver of electricity that releases from your heart into the wind of all their nights. Speak of the way a mother gave birth to her first child and offered such an innocent gift to the world before she died. Whisper the names of all the children who passed from this land into the open arms of the next when their school was marked as a target on a screen miles away. Repeat words that define entire families by the food they ate, seasoned with cardamom and coriander, holy basil and spice. When you speak of the dead, you become a conduit for lost lives to linger in unexpected places. A look on the crowded subway, a fleeting touch on the shoulder, breath against your ear. Speak of the dead to create a tapestry of endless life, shimmering like glossy wings opening in the air that circles around you. Next time around, let me come back as water, the taste of salt marsh and blue tide on my tongue. Let my body become an estuary where birds winter over, the long rise and fall of my lungs filled with wind from the Indian Ocean. Let me become an archipelago filled with the inward suck and mighty push of liquid that softens all things, a force that undoes man-made knots and translates longing into something physical. Let me be a stream that rushes headfirst to join the green body of an ocean seeking communion with sand. Next time around, let me come back as a snowy egret, gliding her long bones at dawn over the Vallejo wetlands. Let me come back as wings opening in the blue expanse of air, so I am lifted and held by the great nothingness that surrounds all of us. Let me come back as water etched with thunder, so autumn trees shake and scatter their leaves like 100 canaries, and I am set free in the mouth of some bright yellow storm. I just want to read this poem from an older book because as poets, this person might also have been or be a muse to some of you, as he has been for me. Lorca's Dawn. I don't know why Lorca came to visit me. Perhaps because I was too tired to get out of bed, open the windows, or invite the outside world in. He came through the adobe walls as though they were air to pull up a chair by my dreaming body. He was urging me to go with him into his broad avenues of light. While I was happy to stay in bed, hung up on red maces and the God in holy dirt, he offered white linen afternoons, the forgiving nature of the fabric. I countered with California poppies, the shyness of orange petals. He whispered that cigars were hard to find in that other world. I shared the pepper taste of nasturtiums when the flower explodes against my tongue, and he pointed to the loneliness of light trapped in the features of stars. Morning banged against the door, anxious to knit her shape back into his side, light wanting to create dawn with his body. Lorca said, "This was the nature of light. She can never decide what she wants. Sometimes she acts as old as a grandmother, stays on the brow, and sometimes she brings the olive tree to life, climbing in all the branches as eager as a child." He said it was really the broad face of Minerva waiting just outside. And this was the juncture where his past surfaced in my arms. So I was embracing empty rooms of moon and water, yellow plains with footprints of smoke. In the distance, the sound of gunfire he turned to, claimed it as his own, rose to go, gathering his light in pleats and folds, while from the street outside, sirens signaled birth or death, the tail end of night lit by Lorca's dawn. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Devereaux. So, we are moving along. We have one more poet. Stephen Kessler is another poet who read at the Word Temple Poetry Series before tonight a couple of times. And being an avid fan of the poets grouped in the generation of 27, including Lorca, Raphael Alberti, Vicente Alexandre, among others, I'm really, really happy that Kessler is here to read from his most recent translations of Luis Cernuda. This is his new collection of translations. When he was here last, I think you read from Desolation of the Chimera when you were here last time, translations of Cernuda also. So these are all new poems. Stephen Kessler is, to say the least, very prolific. I think that if I had to say one thing about him, that would be it. He is a poet, a prose writer, a translator, an editor. He's the author of 10 books and chapbooks of original poetry, 16 books of literary translation, and 3 collections of essays. His most recent books, published in the spring of 2015, are Where Was I? Prose Poems and Memoirs, Need I Say More? Essays, and Forbidden Pleasures, the book he'll be reading from tonight. He is also the author of a novel, The Mental Traveler, the editor and principal translator of The Sonnets by Jorge Luis Borges, and from 1999 through 2014 was the founder and editor of the Redwood Coast Review, which I know many of you here have read. His awards include a Lambda Literary Award and the Harold Morton Landon Translation Award from the Academy of American Poets for his previous translations of Cernuda, Written on Water and Desolation of the Chimera. Since the 1970s, his personal, cultural, literary, and political essays, feature articles, columns, interviews, and reviews have appeared in dozens of independent literary journals and alternative newsweeklies, mainly here in Northern California.
This is Catherine Hastings, and you're listening to Word Temple on KRCB 91.1 FM.
His papers are collected at the Lilly Library, Indiana University in Bloomington, and it gives me great pleasure to introduce to you now Stephen Kessler.
Thank you, Catherine. Thank you, Deborah, for that beautiful reading. Sarita was born in 1902 in Seville, and he came of age in this cohort of poets that Catherine mentioned, the generation of 1927, in Madrid. He was one of the stars, one of the young stars of that generation. In 1936, the first edition of his collected poems came out. They knew how to bring out poems in those days. They would have a banquet. It wasn't like a reading. It was a banquet, and the poet would read, and everybody would stand up and pay homage to to their colleague. And Lorca, on that occasion, famously said that Cernuda's poems made him really mad because they were so perfect that he was jealous of them. And actually, there's a blurb on the back of this book by Lorca where he says, "La realidad y el deseo," which is the title of Cernuda's collected poems, "Reality and Desire." "La realidad y el deseo has conquered me with its immaculate perfection, with its enamored agony and chains, with its anger and its stony shadows. A book delicate and terrifying at the same time, like a pale key trailing strands of blood with each stroke of the strings. There will be no writer of any kind in Spain, if he's really a writer, a master of language, who won't be filled with admiration for the enchantment and refinement with which Luis Cernuda joins words together to create his own poetic universe. No one should be surprised by his rhapsodic lyricism, akin to Becker's, and his capacity for myth, for the transformation of elements evident in the gorgeous poem Young Man of the Sea, with the power of our greatest classical poets." So that was Lorca's homage to Cernuda. A few weeks after that, the Civil War started. Franco and his military fascists invaded Spain, and the next 3 years, there was a very bloody civil war, which ended in a 40-year dictatorship of Francisco Franco. Lorca, as most of you know, was murdered in the first days of the war, and many of the other poets of that generation ended up in exile. Some died in the civil war. Cernuda went to England to give some lectures in 1938, and he never returned to Spain. He stayed in Great Britain for about 10 years, and then he came to the United States. He taught at Mount Holyoke in Massachusetts in the late 40s and early 50s, and in 1952 he moved to Mexico, where he spent the last 10 years of his life. He actually taught at San Francisco State for a year, and also at UCLA. I think it was in 61 and 62 he taught at State, and in 62 and 63 he taught at UCLA. And then he was planning to come back to UCLA in the fall of 63 when he died of a heart attack in Mexico City. He was 61 years old. So for the last 15 years or so, I've had the privilege of working in Cernuda's poetry, which is considered by most Spaniards and Latin Americans to be among the pinnacle achievements of Spanish language poetry. It's very difficult to transmit the music of his language, which is the great power of its beauties is in the music as well as in the ideas. He's a poet of passion, of melancholy, heartbreak, exile. He was gay and made no secret of it in his life or in his writing, so that gave him an extra dimension of both daring and alienation. And he had a range of voices and styles and personae that I tried to represent as well as I could in this selection from his earliest poems in from the late 20s up until 19 through like 1949. So I'll try to give you a little sampling of Sarita's poetry. There's a kind of erotic mysticism in Sarita that is well illustrated by this poem. It's called Phantoms of Desire. I never knew you, Earth. With my useless eyes, my fluttering hands, I cried in my blindness under your green smile, even though in my childish breathing I could feel at times a turbulence thirsting to be humbled, like a hurricane churning in my chest. Not knowing you, my earth, not knowing your breathing hurricane turbulence, just like this melancholy bubble I've become, that your steel voice might have inspired to live a little. Now I know that you're the one who gave me this form, this longing. Finally, I know the slender ocean, the enamored light, the smiling boys are nothing more than yourself, that the living, the dead, pleasure and grief, friendship, solitude, misery, the stupid boss, the man in love, the lowlife, are as worthy of me as I of them. My arms, Earth, are spread still wider, stronger, the better to hold your insatiable hunger. Love doesn't take just this or that form. It never really stays in any being. We are all equally vile and dreamy. Pleasure that never dies, kisses that never die. I find them in no one but you, my earth. Auras of youth, dark or blonde hair, curly or straight like springtime, on coppery bodies, on radiant bodies I've loved so much, so uselessly. Life is not in you, but in the earth, in the faithful earth that waits forever, with its parted lips, with its open arms. Just let me hold them and know for a few moments this divine world that is mine for now, mine as I myself am, as were other bodies that my arms once held, like sand kissed by my lips, that pretends to be other lips, yielding to desire, until the wind blows away all its lying grains. Like sand, earth, like sand itself, caresses are a lie, love is a lie, friendship a lie. You alone stay true to desire, this desire that feels like mine and isn't mine, but everyone's desire, the wicked, the innocent, lovers, lowlifes, earth, earth and desire, a lost embodiment. So that's one kind of Sarita poem. This is another kind. Sarita, an image that appears repeatedly in Sarita's poetry is the chopo, which is a poplar, a certain kind of a poplar. I think the kind that tends more toward the willowy shape. And they appear repeatedly in his poems. And this is one of the... This is a rare happy poem in Sarita's obra. It's called September Wind and the Poplars. In this clear weather, summer's excitement over, my vain desire is still chasing something through the woods. A who knows what, a shadow, body of my desire, a leafy joy somehow, near a serene river. But listen, an echo, a star-like melody in slender air, sounds among the poplars. I can hear soft caresses. I can hear softer kisses. Wings beating over there. Secrets moving here. No, you don't even exist, quiet streams and hollows, fragile fallings in love, as if with human shadows. No, luminous youth, you don't play with my fate. I'm not in search of that grace, nor that brief smile's mouth. Run down there, in the reeds, whispering harmony, A voice is singing, singing like mine, a little ways off. I'm letting down my hair. I'm looking for lips, glances, behind the restless leaves of these slender bodies. I take deep breaths of darkness. I hear my own desire. Sing, my longing, sing the song of my happiness. You tall mortal shadows, I leave you life, desire, song. I want my spirit submerged and turn to yellow glory. I want to read you at least one short poem in Spanish just to give you a sense of what they sound like. El Sino. El alma en armonía a solas quiere vivir junto al amado, con el silencio que una rosa se entreabre en su ramo. El alma en desacuerdo a solas debe morir junto a lo extraño, con el silencio que una rosa que se deshoja en su ramo. Destiny. The soul in harmony wants to be near its love as silently as a rose opening on a branch. The soul that's out of tune must die alone, estranged, as silently as a rose letting its petals fall. One of Cernuda's genres or forms is the dramatic monologue. He writes a lot of poems in the voices of other people and historic characters. This is a dramatic dialogue which really speaks to his sense of the tragic destiny of the poet, both his own personal destiny and just the fate of the poet, especially in a world that pretty much ignores or disdains poetry. So this poem is called Noche del Hombre y su Demonio, Night of a Man and His Demon. It has two voices, the demon and the man. It starts off with the demon. The hours before dawn are alive. They rule your realm. They understand the pure grief of existence. Your soul is in the dark now, and your eyes find nothing but darkness around you. This is the right time to talk about life, the life you love so much. If you blame God, whose creation it is, for giving it to you wrapped in death, don't waste his gift on dreaming. Wake up, man. In my sleep's embrace, I was learning to die. Why remind me? Maybe you envy a man his dreams. I love this solitary break even more than living. And you uproot me from it to drag me back to the carnival of shadows you've slipped out of with a prophet's attitude and the smooth moves of a disgraced diplomat. Get out of here. Leave me alone. A man's not the only thing forged in God's image. His demon bears an even stronger resemblance. Maybe my appearance fails to suggest my hidden powers. I know hypocrisy. I get old, besides. And the sulfuric hurricane of wings on the body of the angel I once was makes time faint. I'm your mirror. I can't give back the fleeting youth that has deserted you. In a man's happiest hours, when he's forgetting, you prod my consciousness, my suffering. You stir up memories like a swarm of hornets. Your sarcasm sabotages every deed, leaving it undone and come to nothing. And then, weighing the value of a poet's dreams against a poplar and spring sun, you whisper that dreams are a worthless shadow of that reality. Your intelligence is born of an illusion. It's like a flower given to an old man. And if it seems to delay death for a while, soon enough it will all come clear. But if time wipes out material things, the value of essences counts for nothing. Language has been your enemy. Because of it, you forgot to be alive. Now you blame me for believing in words. Was there anyone but you who filled me with this madness? The bitter pleasure of turning actions into sounds, of replacing deeds with words, has been the constant passion of my life. And my voice, scarcely heard now or not at all, will go on sounding after I'm dead, all by itself, like wind in the reeds by the river. Nobody hears one voice, you know that much. Whoever heard a single stranger's voice that's pure and solitary? The charlatan, the cocky preacher watch their followings grow, fed on their lies. They live, they prosper, you slowly rot alone. What does tomorrow matter? When destiny forgets them and you're remembered, you'll be a name, a sound, a breath of air. You twist your knife in the deepest part of me. You know no man can tolerate being merely alive. As in some tragic game, he has to stake his life on something, something to idolize, if only a clay statue. And he'd rather die than admit he's been tricked. My mistake was innocent, and it ruined no one but me, though at times even I could see right through it. I'm feeling nostalgic tonight for other lives. I'd like to be an ordinary man with a slack soul who gains some benefit from money, leaves his seed inside his lawful wife, reaps obedience from his offspring, shapes his thinking according to public opinion, believes in God, and weekly goes to his church. Why are you giving me such a hard time? If the salt of the earth has lost its taste, nothing can bring it back. And you wouldn't even exist if I were someone else and maybe a little happier. Not that it's a question of being happy. I love the pure, bitter flavor of life. This feeling for others, a consciousness they've lost, with its regrets, and accepting the sins they themselves have rejected. You poor joke of a monk. Admit what privileges the rich and powerful reap. Wings that can sift sunlight, deny the dark side of life, gratify desires. They fortify themselves with comforting friendships, can buy anything since everything's for sale, and contemplating the misery of others, feel their pleasures to be even sweeter. We're not born twice, my friend. I live at the pleasure of God. Whoever escaped his destiny? Mine was to explore this strange terrain with you right behind me, my suffering made worse by your sarcasm. But enough already, lest anyone should think I'm complaining. Better to feel the anguish of being alive than know nothing, like the ones who run the world, locked in their void behind golden doors. In the end, who can say it's not your demon but God who's talking to you? You know that I'm the only friend you've got to shake you up a little and suffer with you. But look at the way the sunrise in the window calls you to live another pointless day. The world does not approve of the unhappy. So remember to smile and, like the one watching over you, rise and shine, though here you can hope for nothing. So I think I'll finish with a longer poem, not that that wasn't long enough. So maybe I think, although he wrote a lot of beautiful short lyrics, I think his reputation really rests on his longer poems, including this one, which is the one that Lorca mentioned in what I read to you at the start. This is a poem about a drowned sailor. It's called Young Man of the Sea. The ocean, nothing else. Insatiable, insatiable. You walk barefoot over the oblivious sand, your hair gently writhing under the wind's rough influence, like someone anticipating pleasure. Turned into an albatross of passion, its tragic longing breaking out in wings, you answered your only master, the ocean, the only creation that could ever possess your life. To have it in sight was not enough for you, nor in the light embrace of the casual swimmer. You wanted more, its perfect, lucid lips thirstily pressed to yours, your broken waist against the silvery shield of its belly, your life escaping like blood set free from the deadly forgetting where you fell. There you are still. You don't remember, because now you are nothing but a mute memory. And that remote beauty encoded in your body as in a pillar now breathes only in me, in me, who resurrects it in this obscure form, who when you lived, imagined you on an invisible altar. For you, the sun running its hot tongue over the dark diamond of your skin all through the length of so many slow mornings given to heavenly leisure, suffused with a golden pollen like the corolla of some happy flower in divine repose, divine indifference, was not enough. Your limber, agile body dropped like a deadly weapon into the great unknowable creature, the inexpressible ocean, neither suffering nor desiring, like some god who nonetheless might know in human form our barren desires, our lost sorrows. And look far out into those dark afternoons when grave clouds, dense swarms of black wings, poured their rumbling silence into the sea. Even the gulls thrashed by the storm embodied the air's anguish. Remember the ocean's agitation shuddering from its depths, like a madman trying to force up into the light the hidden core of his illness, twisting its pale body into the shapes of waves, its inexhaustible, aching body, writhing for your love, it too inexhaustible, and you unable to raise even the shell of a hand to shield your storm-lashed face. The vagabond graces of April unfurled their little leaves above the lazy sand. A new youth started moving in the veins of wintry men. Shyness, modesty, chills ran free before the gleaming dagger of desire, a deafening word for one wounded body and soul by the bites of love's terrifying teeth, because desire is erected on the storm's rack when the sun blazes on the world's beaches. But what do I care about the world's beaches? This beach is the only one nailed in my memory, because here's where I saw you walking, dark as a black dawn, dragging the wings of your beauty across its expansive curve, like a branch exploding with opening blossoms under the sunlight, with its armor of tall cliffs fallen into its oleander and palm-dotted dunes in that languid place in the lazy south. I can still see those rosy, salty swells, the breeze's light mills, and those small, dark bodies just slightly moving near the beasts of burden, hauling the lunatic blocks of salt atop the wagons, sad like everything else connected with earthly labor, even the big boats sliding over the breast of the sea. Who could live on earth if not for the sea? I saw you so many times, your delicate ankles caressed by the ample ring of your bell bottoms, your chest and shoulders spread above your slender waist, voluptuously draped in blue wool like ivy, indifference sculpted on your tough lips, immersed in contemplation, gazing out to sea, more mesmerized than a man by his lover's body. We are entangled in changing emotions with one or another body, all of them no more than shadows obscuring love's supreme form, which throbs for itself, blind to the changing of bodies, lit by the heat of its own invincible flame. I adored you as an emblem of every beautiful body, stripped of the veils that mask the hidden image of love. More than love itself, more, do you hear me? Insatiable like you, inexhaustible like you, knowing the ocean was the only thing in creation worthy of you, and your body the only one worthy of its inhuman magnificence. The sun was going down. The day's birds flew off before the furtive thoughts of the dark. Men were lying in their bungalows beside their wives and children, barefoot in funereal artificial light, stalking dreams in their beachfront beds, as if unable to sleep too far from what gives them life and what brings them death. The ocean's presence gave off a vast silence, a vast calm, but also pulsing in the cool and sleepy air of that lethal sundown was a dark fear of who knows what pale monsters, masters of grayish serpents and black seahorses, opening the murky waters, their twisted limbs wrestling with rebellious, beastly powers of the abyss. The ghostly specters of boats rose slowly out of the drowsy sand. Cool, voluptuous bodies, with the grace of an animal turning its gaze to implore its master, whose hands provide protection and caresses, and sees them pulling away and knows it can never keep them. Not at this hour, not at this hour of cowardly repose. At dawn, young sailor, is when you had to go down to the ocean naked as a flower. And that's when you had to give it your love, when the sea could possess you, body to body, until its life and yours were mixed together, and its tremendous love awoke in you, the brief spasm of consummated pleasure, wedded one with the other, life with life, death with death. And just that once, like a cut rose, your body floated, scarcely deformed by the ocean's nuptial caresses. But your lips were a little pale, as if all your passion, the wings of life, had flown out from between them. You were equally beautiful that way, young man of the sea, painfully sad in your uninhabited beauty, as when the life in your musical limbs was iridescent. Lives change, but death is constant. I can still hear that bloodless voice, which in its delirium reached me across the sails washed up on the beach like torn-off wings. Someone who understood you were gone because he could see you were dead, like a rose tossed into the sea, said slowly, "He was lighter than water." Men are so empty, so full of shame, they collide without seeing each other. But how sweet it will be to roll, exactly like you, on the other side, in oblivion. That's how your death awakens in me the desire to die, just as your life awakened in me the desire to live. Thank you.
This is Catherine Hastings, and I have just enough time to tell you that the next reading at the Word Temple Poetry Series will take place at the Sebastopol Center for the Arts on February 20th at 7 p.m. with poet-philosopher Troy Jollymore and Heather Altfeld. March 26th is the next very special event. It is a celebration with Dana Gioia, who has just been named California State Poet Laureate. For more information, go to wordtemple.com. I hope you enjoyed tonight's program. Thanks for listening.